It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harbell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins in the studio. And welcome back, and Happy New Year.
Good morning, Ben.
Happy New Year, Ben.
It's good to have you all here with us here today.
And 2015.
Back for the
here we are.
Big year. All right.
And with that in mind, Ben, this time of year, Wes and I always speak about your legal New Year resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's address a few of those.
Okay, good.
Ben, I know we've maybe commented about this before on the program, but I just don't think we can talk about it enough and kind of demystify this concept of account registrations.
Mm-hmm.
Beneficiaries. One of the most important things that I think any of our listeners could do here during the first month of 2015 is to just take a little bit of time during the leisure part of the day and review your account registrations, your IRA beneficiaries, mm-hmm. your life insurance beneficiaries,
right,
and generally the titles to your assets. When I say account registrations, I'm primarily speaking about your bank accounts, your CDs,
mm-hmm.
your stock accounts, your bonds, if you have savings bonds in the lockbox or at home in a safe place, anything in your financial life, and what you're looking at, what you're trying to discern is, how do I have these accounts registered? I guess in the olden days, Ben, you know, you just had your money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right.
You just had your CD at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we've become very sophisticated, whether that's good or bad. There are all of these various ways now that an account can be registered.
Mm-hmm.
Time on death, payable on death, joint with right of survivorship. And it really is important that you review these account registrations and make sure that they are consistent with what you want to happen. Just yesterday, I got a call from a lady. We've done all of their planning. This woman has two daughters and a son. The son is handicapped in a way or has some limitations, and therefore he needs more of a liquid
mm-hmm.
Portfolio, but not necessarily the real property. So
right.
The will leaves the real property to the daughters. They're two real properties.
Mm-hmm.
And the accounts are left more significantly to the son, who would need the money.
Right.
And the question was, but I've gotten the IRA statement
mm-hmm.
for my mom, and how should I make those beneficiaries?
Hmm. Okay. Right.
And, of course, you know, the answer is, well, you need to make those beneficiaries consistent with what your mother's intention is, which is clearly in her file,
mm-hmm.
that your brother have the lion's share of the liquidity for his future. He's able to handle money.
Right.
He just doesn't need the responsibility of real property.
Mm-hmm.
And he's best set in a very simple rental kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
He has a job, but he needs the money. The daughters don't need the money, but they want to have these very, you know, family pieces of property. One, you know, in another state,
sure.
and one here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so she thought about that for a minute, and she thought, gosh, Cecil, you're exactly right. I don't know why I didn't think about that. That's not the way those are registered right now. Their beneficiaries are a third, and a third.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, that is inconsistent with what your mother's intention
right.
is
right.
long term. So there's maybe an example that helps our listeners. Look at each registration.
And a lot of people may think that the will was going to take care of that.
Oh, no. Absolutely, it does not.
Mm-hmm.
All of these registrations trump the will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they are by contract that you have set up with the bank, with the stock company, with your mutual fund company, whatever the case might be, with your IRA, with your life insurance company that this is how this asset passes upon my death. And it's not just how they pass at your death. With regard to account registrations, it can also be that adding your children's names to these accounts at the bank and at the stock companies can, you know, that gives your child ownership in those accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of that, of course, those accounts can be caught up in their bankruptcies. That can be caught up in any kind of creditor issues that your child might have, divorce issues that your child might have.
Right.
I had a file very recently about that. A lady, Pine Oak Shores, very large account.
Mm-hmm.
Very large account with her daughter on the account with Merrill Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow her daughter is on the account. Her daughter now is going through a divorce.
Right.
And the divorce attorney for her daughter, who is in New Jersey, is absolutely claiming that part of that account
mm-hmm.
is the daughter's or is the daughter's assets, and therefore is part of the marital assets of that marriage.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's going to be hard to, I imagine, dissuade.
Well, it will certainly take time to look back. Of course, Wes would do this as not so much a divorce case, but as a litigator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the litigation lawyers will look and see at the source.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the origin? Where was the origination, if you will, origination of the account?
Mm-hmm.
Who funded the account initially? But interestingly, in this file, and I asked that question of my client, and who is very concerned about this.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, you know, my daughter did put $300,000 in the account once.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
that's not what you want to hear, because
now
there
now
has been
yeah.
some commingling and
right.
some confusion. It's not going to be just so simple as to say, well, none of these funds ever had their origin with the daughter. They were all of the mother's monies.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, look at each and every asset you have and check the registration. I was going to say earlier, Ben, a lot of times we don't know the registration. We don't realize that at the bank we check the blank
right,
right of survivorship.
Right.
Or that we signed a form with the stock company, Merrill Lynch, Edward D. Jones, Wells Fargo, whoever it might be, saying that the account is payable on death or time on death. A lot of times our clients do not realize that those forms have been signed.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it is. You go in, you open up an account, your broker calls, says there's some new forms to sign. You can hardly read them. The print is very small, and you just sign them.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right.
You need to check behind all of that.
Okay. Again, some great advice, and we'll have more of that coming up in just a moment. But you can call in with your questions. Maybe you've had a similar situation, but you want to get that confirmed about doing the right thing. Give us a call right now at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law with Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins. We'll have more to come in a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Talk Station, and waiting for your call, too, to call in and ask your questions. And we're talking about New Year's resolutions and some things to do at the first of the year.
We are, and I'm monopolizing the conversation this morning, but Wes is going to bring up an ancillary of this very point. But I thought of something, a scenario that I have also recently
mm-hmm.
encountered.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, imagine that your daughter is on your account, registered as an owner of your account, because you just wanted her on the account
right.
so that she could, quote, pay bills.
Right.
That's what we always hear,
mm-hmm.
rather than using the power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
which gives her access to the account to pay bills. All right. The next thing that happens is that the daughter then dies, okay? And the daughter did not have her affairs in order, have
mm-hmm.
her will and all, and she's in a second marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And now her new husband in the second marriage, who is the beneficiary in many states under intestate succession,
right,
when there is no will,
mm-hmm,
is making claim against your account,
right,
because of the fact that you added your child to the account. We get the question all the time, should I add my children's name to my home place? Should I transfer my property to my child,
mm-hmm,
to my daughter, to my son? Should I add them to my account? And as we're beginning to see, there are many different reasons why one would say, hey, let's not quite do that.
Okay.
You know, another issue, Ben, that we see kind of under this this heading of making sure that we have our beneficiary designation set up properly, and we don't just, you know, leave that on the shelf to collect dust and not really think about it, is that when there's a divorce,
mm-hmm,
a lot of times when there's a divorce, you'll have a separation agreement, or you'll have a court order, you'll have the separation agreement incorporated into a court order, and it'll say something like, you know, my retirement is to go here, you
right,
know, the husband right, keeps the retirement, or the wife keeps the retirement, or certain life insurance policies are supposed to be set up in a certain way. And a lot of times we see that folks get the divorce, they finish everything off, the separation, mm-hmm, agreement indicates how these accounts are supposed to go, but then there is a failure to actually go to the administrator of the account, your retirement plan administrator,
right,
you know, life insurance agent, whoever it might be, and to change those beneficiary designations. So years go by, or even a short period of time goes by, the person passes away, and then the assets under that non-probate account then pass where? To the ex-spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get into a conflict between what was done in court and then what the document says. And that's not a very good place to be.
Right.
Usually the document, the account, the life insurance, the retirement account, military retirement, that's probably the one I see
right,
more, because those documents are just very simple, like Cecil was saying a second ago, hand done,
mm-hmm,
fill it out, here's my beneficiary,
right,
put the spouse
down. Don't even
down,
think about it. Yeah.
You don't even think about it, and you go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just because you got the divorce, and even if you hired an attorney, and you got that separation agreement that says that retirement goes somewhere else other to than the spouse, if you don't go change that,
mm-hmm,
it's going to go to the spouse.
Right.
Okay. Because, see, even if you have the attorney doesn't have the ability to go get those documents and change them for you.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney's dealing with the divorce itself in the court. Okay.
Right.
You're the one who has the right to go get your account information, your retirement information. You own that. So you,
mm-hmm,
have to then follow up, tie off that loose end, and change that yourself.
Now, is that something, if somebody is going through a divorce, could they empower their attorney to do those things?
Yeah, they can give the authority to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say more times than not, we see direction given to the client to do that. Now,
right,
sometimes
right,
when I'm dealing with clients along those lines, and maybe we're dealing with a divorce-related issue or an estate planning issue or maybe, mm-hmm, a trust issue, and we're wanting to incorporate one of those two or three things there in with the, say, life insurance policy, and the client may not know exactly how they want the beneficiary designation to read. They need my help. Well, it's very simple. We just get a change of beneficiary designation form,
right,
fill it out appropriately, have, mm-hmm, the client come in, sign it, and then send it to the company, and then get the confirmation back from the company that it was done. So sometimes we are involved in it. But if I were to just unilaterally call up, you know, the life insurance, mm-hmm, company, for example, or through the military,
right,
and say, I'm Wes Collins, I'm an attorney, this is my client, I need to get this information, it would stop right there, because they don't have authorization to talk to me about that. So
right,
we would have to get that written authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times in the divorce, once the divorce is done,
mm-hmm,
the file is closed by the attorney. And then it's up to the client to then go do everything that we agreed upon in,
mm-hmm,
the divorce. And a lot of times the real estate, for example, does get handled. You know, the wife gets this house and the husband gets this property,
mm-hmm,
and that gets taken care of. But a lot of times, from what I see, these non-probate assets, whether it be life insurance or retirement, just never get handled.
Or,
and then years later, we're dealing with it. And then, you know, obviously the argument is, you know, for example, the husband's died, the wife got the $100,000 mm-hmm. retirement check. Well, she's the ex-wife. She's probably not just going to give it up.
Yes, yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
And so then we get into a dispute here about what the husband intended. Mm-hmm. Well, the ex-wife is going to say, well, it doesn't matter what the separation agreement says. He really intended for that to go to me. Well, he's dead now.
Yeah. So you don't have a witness.
It's kind of a losing position that you end up in. And the law on that is conflicting. You know, we have some cases that support the ex-wife in that scenario,
mm-hmm.
some cases that support the estate mm-hmm. in that scenario, depending on things such as was it a court order or was it just a contract separation agreement. At any rate, you don't want to put yourself or your family in that situation. If there's been a divorce, go ahead and tie off those loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
Check on that. That's a great New Year's resolution.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we're talking about New Year's resolutions, about going back and checking it, especially if you've had any kind of life-changing event over the last year.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned Cecil, too. I mean, even though you may have the titling right on property, the mortgage, the loan might still be out there.
Well, we see this often where the husband and the wife have a home. They mm-hmm. have a mortgage on the home.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go through a divorce. The agreement says that the home stays either with the wife or the husband, whatever they've agreed to.
Right.
And, of course, life then goes on. The wife takes over the home, let's say, has the children in the home. She continues to pay the mortgage payment. 3, 4, 5 years goes by. She's all that time paid the mortgage payment. Then all of a sudden there is some sort of episode and the payment doesn't get made. And unbeknownst to the husband, of course, or who's not the husband anymore, but the ex-husband, mm-hmm. 4, 5, 7 years later, he's getting a notice from the bank of 10 years ago saying your payment on the property hasn't been made. He, of course, immediately says, well, I don't own the property,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's in the divorce settlement that I waived my right to that property. My wife has been living in, my ex-wife has been living in that property. Well, see, that's an agreement between the two of them.
Right.
That agreement never changed the mortgage on the property. Now, you know, there's a lot of follow-through with divorces, as there is in all areas mm-hmm. of the law. The devil is in the details. But absolutely, we see many places where an I didn't get dotted or a T crossed when there's a divorce or when there's a death in the mm-hmm. family, when there's a significant changing event. Absolutely, Ben.
All right, more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, attorneys of law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. The law is increasingly complex, and the growing staff of Harvell and Collins stands ready to untangle your legal challenges. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, along with associates Russell Alexander and Andrew Foster, practicing in all areas of civil practice, including estate planning, elder law and asset protection, estate-related matters, collections and foreclosures, and also civil trial practice in these and all other civil matters. Call to arrange your free initial consultation, 252-726-9050. Plus, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins answer your questions live each Tuesday morning at 7:30 on Let's Talk Legal. Tune in to Coastal Daybreak Tuesday mornings at 7:30 and call in with your legal questions.
My question is, when the covenants are broken by multiple homeowners and there's not really fines or anything that can be placed because that wasn't put in the covenants, what can I do as a homeowner to get some of these problems rectified?
If it's your question, it's important to Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City. As we finish up with some New Year's resolutions here for your legal life with Harvell and Collins of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law on the web at harvellandcollins.com, by the way, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Are some other things that you should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I would say that if you've moved from a different state and you're in North Carolina, obviously our audience here mm-hmm. on this program is North Carolina, then and you have estate planning documents from another state, will, power of attorney, health care, power of attorney, living will, trust documents, I would advise to have those looked at by, you know, a competent lawyer in North Carolina just to make sure that they're in conformance with your wishes.
Mm-hmm.
obviously a thing that we see pretty often now with the fluctuating unified tax credit, which, you know, in the past 10 or 11 years that we've done this program, it's gone all over the place. And we don't know what the future is with that, but there have been some significant changes. So we do, I see this more for clients from other states, you know, moving to this area, maybe for retirement or to mm-hmm. be closer to family or for whatever reason. And they're in what's called a credit shelter trust, or they're in a what's called an AB trust or a bypass trust. And a lot of times this trust has already been funded because that's what you do in other states, but you really don't do it here in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line with regard to that is that there could certainly be some confusion with regard to your estate plan. Your estate plan could be way more complicated than it needs to be right now.
Right, you came from a punitive probate state.
That's
right. To here.
That's right. Yeah. So it would be time and money well spent to sit down, you know, before an attorney who deals in these areas to make sure that your documents are doing what they were intended to do in New Jersey or, mm-hmm. or whatever state that might be. And obviously, another caveat to that would be, even if you are, you know, a North Carolina citizen and have North Carolina documents, if you've got a little age on your documents, 5, 6 years, 7 years, you know, set an appointment with your attorney who prepared those for you, and let's take a look at those, you know, quickly and make sure that that everything is in order. That's a great resolution.
Okay. Yeah. Again, that's a good reason to get out all those dust off those documents.
And we'll continue with a few more of these legal New Year's resolutions next week, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We spent a couple of weeks in the past talking about titling alone.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
So
I don't think we can talk about it too much, really.
Mm-hmm.
Wes and I just see just such a high volume of confusion around that, and of course litigation.
Mm-hmm.
Fiduciary litigation, which is where that category, if you will, of account registrations between family members and what they should and shouldn't do and mm-hmm. what they did and did not attend, is one of the fastest growing areas of the law for lawyers.
Right.
Okay. There are certain law firms in North Carolina, larger law firms, that have only hired lawyers in the last year or two in that section of their law firms,
mm-hmm.
big firms in Charlotte and Raleigh. A lot of this has to do with this changing environment of all of these various ways that one can register accounts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It has created an enormous amount of confusion amongst the public in general, and it is creating a lot of litigation. So it's not just, you know, if an account is registered $200,000 or $300,000 with mm-hmm. one child and they get it, it's a lot of times not very comfortable for that child to then share it with the other two or three.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, families are families and money is money. I know these are not things we like to admit to,
yeah.
But hey, you know, Wes and I are seeing this on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
It's a problem.
If you want to find out more and get the right advice at the right time, you can call on the folks at Hartwell & Collins Attorneys at Law at 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, HartwellandCollins.com.